Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo Tinolfo, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Patrick Mifflin will be here, hopefully, later on. He's got a bit of a situation happening over at his end. So when he's ready, he'll be with us. But this episode is for November 8th, 2019. And, y'all may not have known this until you woke up probably Thursday morning, but we had an election here in the U.S. We had some elections, some special elections, and it was yet another blue wave. And they managed to win in places you seriously did not expect. What we can tell you, though, is that a formerly red state is now a blue state. We will tell you which one and why that's a big deal. It involves the Constitution and an amendment that people want to add to it. We also had some historic firsts happen as well. But we also got some other stuff, including some more bullshit from the Trump administration and former Trump administration, specifically a certain little gremlin from Alabama who's trying to get their Senate seat. I'll tell you about it later. Also, a city in Germany has officially declared that they have a Nazi emergency. If you're wondering what that means,
stay tuned.
Well, we'll tell you. But as always, the Germans do not fuck around when it comes to stuff like this. Because they have long memories. also, amongst other things, we got some weird, we got some entertainment news, including the ongoing trend of taking dead entertainers and then resurrecting them via CG. Let me tell you what's going to be happening this time. Also, there's some shenanigans going with the Motion Picture Academy. We'll tell you about it. Nick Cage has a new movie coming out.
Yeah.
And it looks good, and it looks also equally insane. So it's the perfect Nick Cage movie. but we'll be getting to all that and more. But before we get to that, let us start off, as we always do. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
I'm still playing PC Building Simulator. I finished the game, sort of. In that I own 100% of the company now, but I can still keep playing. So it's So now Uncle Tim is not asking for money anymore. So that's good. I could keep all my, but it cost me about 100 grand total to get him off my back. So that was kind of fun. And PC Building Simulator was also responsible for me actually making an upgrade to my PC that I didn't think I would ever do, which is weird because I have a nice case, Fractal Design Define R4. It's a nice little understated case. And I've always been kicking myself because when I bought it, I could have gotten the one with the tempered glass panel, but I didn't. Finally I saw, like, well, Newegg had like a few of those tempered glass panels available for sale at a pretty steep discount, and it was like, well, okay, I'll go ahead and do that. So now I have a glass side. Now I actually have to clean up in there to actually, you know, manage the cables, and now I'm gonna be fans, and this is not gonna end well. I don't think. Yeah. So, and also snow.
Well, it's Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely pants weather, probably for us up here, snow pants weather. So, yeah, not really too enthused about that, but, you know, it's Canada, and we kind of knew it was coming eventually. What I've been dealing with.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
Well, this is my first week of not working, so I've been doing a lot of things that are boring to talk about, but exciting that I got it all done. One of the things that isn't boring to talk about, at least for me, is I finally made it to level 40 in Pokemon Go. So I was in a park freezing my ass off because I didn't realize we were going to go to that raid and it wasn't car accessible and I didn't have my coat with me. So I'm standing around like with these other people who are all quite warm. And I stole a cashmere sweater that I just bought for my husband and probably stretched it out too much. Mm-hmm. Put it on, surrounded by goose shit everywhere, trying not to step in it. Yeah, thanks, Canada, for the green plague that happens whenever it gets too cold. And I finally did. After that raid, I got to level 40. And that was pretty decent for me. I was glad to see that. And it was nice that it happened like with other people, not just sitting in my car spinning a Pokemon stop, right? At least it was something, you know, kind of, I don't know, noteworthy. We've been watching Halloween movies because we didn't get through all of them. So, like, those guys had never seen Nightmare Before Christmas. And they got
Whoa, seriously?
I mean, I borrowed it. You guys know it came out in 93, right?
Yep.
It's old. So I was living on campus, and we borrowed the AV cart with a TV and a VCR and checked out the VHS from the library. And the girl who lived in the dorm room next door to me and myself sat down in one of our rooms, plugged in the big old monster, and watched it one weekend when we weren't doing anything else. But yeah, I guess like those guys never managed to see it, so it was completely new to them. Yeah, so we watched that and the Snoopy one, Great Pumpkin. I can't remember what all we watched, but I think we're mostly done with Halloween movies. So now we can move on to Thanksgiving ones. And this isn't a movie, but we'll totally watch the Thanksgiving song from Saturday Night Live. Yeah, we'll do that. And then I've been playing some of the Challenge Islands in Kingdom Two Crowns. And later tonight, I think I am going to do some online co-op play. Chris, if you're ever up for that, just let me know. With some guy off of Reddit who wants to play. So just a random Redditor. We'll go around and try to defeat the greed. Yeah. But that's about it. I did pick up an old game that we used to play quite a bit. Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. So I picked that up today and we are attempting to find all the hookups for the PS2. Yeah, we dug that out from under the bed and I think I hear Scott in the back rifling around through the drawers of cords trying to figure out where everything is. So we'll be playing that. That'll be fun.
You also got some experience with a little Canadian tradition.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, clearly you guys can tell I'm sick. I'm getting better. I'm getting a lot better. I was so sick last week. I couldn't even record. Yeah, there's this, what is it called? Starts with a B, right?
Buckley's. Yeah.
Buckley's. Yeah. So that tastes like, I don't know, the wrath of the devil. It's like ghostly brimstone because the kind that I got is a very milky whitish type of liquid.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like drinking Vicks VapoRub.
Yep.
Yep. And a few other things. But oddly, it has a really good aftertaste once the initial shock is over and you've burned off any trace of body hair from, you know, your lips all the way down to your stomach. Which, no, yeah, even females have body hair in that, area.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. But yeah, it does pack a wallop. I just wish that it lasted like more than 3 hours because it says, you know, repeat every 2 to 3 hours. But it quiets it down so you can go to sleep, which helps a lot. And seriously, like I took one dose. I think it was a third dose that I took. And my ears unclogged and I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know they were clogged.
Yeah, it's definitely from the let's kill everything that's not you school pharmaceuticals.
It certainly is. It's scorched earth brimstone liquid. Ew. But, hey, it works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Amazon, people, if you want to get that in the States, it's Amazon.
Yeah.
Well, that's about it for me, I think.
All right, Chris, what about you?
It's fucking cold here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was out and about yesterday, and it rained for a good chunk of the day and then snowed. So luckily it didn't stick, but so it was a nice, like, dumb icing on top of, like, well, this is shitty, and then here comes the snow. Yeah, like, right now it's 26 degrees out.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to be out for a good bit tomorrow, and wind chill's going to keep it in the 20s for a bit there in the morning. So not looking forward to that.
But yeah, shouldn't it get, like, much warmer tomorrow after the day goes on?
Maybe about 40?
Well, yeah, it's a lot warmer, man.
Yeah, but wind chill keep it down.
Yeah, it's true. It's still going to be really windy.
Yeah, luckily, that's the only day I'm going to be out for a bit, so get that over with and be done with it. But yeah, and I'm looking forward to this winter stuff. But yeah, I went and saw Terminator Dark Fate last Saturday, which was a lot of fun, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely feels like a much better avenue for them to go than what they've been doing for the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
With Genesis and whatever the other one was. With Christian Bale in it, I think.
Mm.
I forget what that one was called, but yeah, they do some cool stuff here. Some nods to the to Terminator 2 and that stuff. But I imagine the asshole part of the audience is very much going to be mad because it's very feminist. Obviously with, like, the main badass Terminator killer is the
Sarah Connor. Well, I mean, the original, the Terminator 1 and 2 were both very feminist already.
Yeah, I mean, but Sarah Connor. Also the supposed future of the Resistance is a Mexican girl.
Oh.
That they smuggle into the U.S. To take down this new Terminator that has some pretty cool abilities where he can not only does he have, like, the metal liquid skin stuff, but he can pull that off of his body completely and operates as two. So have the sort of robot skeleton kind of doing its own thing. And then the kind of metal liquid morphing skin kind of doing its own thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
That creates some cool moments in that. And of course, if you've seen the trailers, Arnold's in it. But not as any of the other Terminators that you've seen. He's like a newish Terminator from... So, like, at the end of T2, essentially, they get rid of the Terminators, and Skynet is done. There's no more Skynet. But in sort of the typical Terminator fashion, there's an inevitability that somebody else does it, which kind of ties into modern-day tech with, you know, AIs, drones, all that kind of stuff that people keep pushing for some reason. And this movie is kind of like, yeah, there's kind of an inevitability even when you take down the evil company that originally took was going to create the technology that took over the world, somebody else is never going to, you know, do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And yeah, it ends pretty well in a way that kind of sets himself up pretty well for sequels.
Mm-hmm.
It's a better future than, like, what they did with After 3.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
This is
kind of
one, right?
Yeah. What's that?
This is a James Cameron one, right?
Yeah, he produced it with Tim Miller's director,
okay.
Director of Deadpool.
Hmm.
So yeah, there's a bit of humor in that, but yeah, a lot of people are pissed because they kill off John Connor at the beginning of the movie. Because essentially, like, Sarah and John are kind of chilling, like in Mexico, after Judgment Day was supposed to happen. And then a Terminator shows up and kills John. And so she's kind of been bitter for the last like 20 years, whatever it is, kind of doing her own thing as a very paranoid woman. So yeah, people are like, well, they killed John Connor for nothing. It's like, it's an inevitability. Somebody rises up to lead the resistance. Just like there's inevitability that there's a new company that creates the evil AI that overtakes the world, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a fun movie. Let's see. Been doing some streaming this week and getting annoyed that YouTube doesn't like to upload all my videos at the resolution I recorded. Where I'll go through the processing and it's like, oh, this is 360p. I'm like, the hell it is. I have to fucking upload it again. Because it just doesn't seem to want to use the actual resolution of the video. For some reason, it bugs out. Anyway, it's kind of annoying. But on Sunday, I streamed the Neo 2 open beta.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. And it's very hard as well. Some of the cool stuff they do with this is that the interface is kind of pretty much the same. So you have like the same kind of two weapons, two ranged the items and all that. When you're at a station, the prior station, you can when you sell stuff back for the offering, it gives you like a secondary currency that you use to essentially fill out, like you can add extra items to your outfit. So you can like get more of the med packs than what you would normally have coming out of it. So you can get like, I had like 8 or 9 at one point just from using all that stuff. They added the new Switchglaive, which is this new weapon that kind of morphs depending on the stance you're in. So there's like the mid stance is this kind of straight out like a staff, but with a big giant blade at the end. When you're in low stance, I think it's kind of comes together like a switchblade, like a folded switchblade. When you're in high stance, it's like a Reaper scythe kind of thing. So depending on what kind of stance you're in, it has different kind of physical forms. That is kind of a really cool way to do that. The starter area that you're in just kind of has all the weapons up front for you to pick up and check out, which makes it a little bit better than the tutorial area from the original game. And there's just a bunch of different kinds of the weapon. The area feels very kind of intricate compared to what I've played of Neo, which is kind of just that first area, the first couple areas in Neo. And this one kind of has a lot of those. The one they have in the beta at least has a lot of the buildings in it. There's a couple buildings nearby, so it kind of definitely has like a little bit of twisty design that kind of folds in on itself a lot. So you end up kind of being able to get a lot more places to explore than you could before. But in tighter spaces versus these kind of spread out spaces that the that I saw in the original kind of stuff. But yeah, it's kind of more of that. So if you like Neo 1, this is going to probably be right up your alley. And
by the way, it does don't is this don't you actually get like a custom character this time instead of
Yeah, you can kind of design the character how you want.
All
right. There's pretty robust customization on that.
Yeah, I heard there's also a breast slider on that.
There probably was. I didn't really pay too much attention to it. Team
Ninja, so.
Yeah. That's also pretty common in games that have that stuff.
Yeah.
Like Fallout, you could do the same thing in Elder Scrolls and all that. But yeah, it seemed pretty intricate, but also the armor you're going to get is going to cover up everything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they had some cool, kind of like feudal Japanese like makeup styles as well.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that kind of stuff, too. But I did like that, like, you'd have scars, but you also move them on the face.
Mm.
So you can kind of make them wider, thinner, stretch them out, kind of turn them around and move them around on the face. So it's not just like a lot of games just like, oh, here's the scar that goes across the eye. Mm. Or here's the scar that goes, you know, over the bridge of the nose. Like, there's just like one specific place they go in. This one, it's a lot of good customization.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're probably looking to make it look like, you know, Ryu or one of the other Dead or Alive characters.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably make them pretty well. Well, so yeah, I played Neo then because it's on PlayStation Plus.
Yeah,
I hadn't really played much more than the like that beginning area you're in.
Tower of London.
Yeah, the Castle of London. And that whole area ends pretty weird, where it's like, oh, here's where it's Japanese game.
Yep.
Where it's the dude that gets powered up by the gem. That wasn't too hard to beat. But yeah, once I got to the regular area, that's where it started getting pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that game is a lot of fun. I got to that little town that's after the first area.
Mm-hmm.
And found some of the, a lot of weird stuff in there. I always hate running into the spots that are going to spawn the demons.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always dumb. But there's a really crazy demon in Neo 2. I fought this giant, it looks like a giant, like, four-legged beast, but it has, like, a bunch of heads all over it.
Mm-hmm.
They spew out the gas that keeps you from regenerating stamina sort of thing. So, like, you have to fight it. You can get in close and do some attacks, but you have to run away from it, too, to get your stamina back. That kind of thing. That's a big fuck you kind of thing to run into. And it had a lot more areas that, at least from the open beta, where you're like unlocking the shortcut back to the previous areas.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see too much of that in Neo. I don't know if there was a ton of that when you played through it.
Okay.
But yeah, what else I stream? Actually, today I streamed Death Stranding. I've been playing some of that, and that game is weird as fuck. even just trying to, there's no way to describe the story.
I've got the game currently downloading on my PSN, but
yeah.
I am legitimately excited to start playing it because holy shit, this is probably the most divisive game of 2019.
Yeah,
there are people who absolutely love it, and there are people who despise it.
Yeah, that's most of Kojima's games.
Yeah, but this one in particular.
Yeah, because it's not like if you're just looking for a shooty bang bang game, it's not really that.
This is not that game.
it has some of that stuff.
Oh yeah,
because I have run into a situation of meeting the mules.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you find out what those are.
Oh yeah.
Has lots of weird terms in it, like mules, dooms. What else have I?
The beach. Out?
Yeah, there's the beach. A lot of stuff that it introduces is like, you won't know anything about this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I can figure out certain things, but yeah, like there's a lot of stuff that's like, okay, I'm gonna have to keep playing to figure out what the fuck is going on here.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I've figured out a lot of stuff so far, like. The first few hours, you'll see a lot of stuff from the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
The first one with the baby,
mm-hmm,
on the beach, that one's already been shown. A lot of stuff featuring, I haven't seen the tank stuff yet. That hasn't been introduced, but there's a lot of that stuff from the first trailers.
Mm-hmm.
First few trailers are in the first few hours. And it takes like a good 2-3 hours before you get to a point where it actually opens up. I got to the point where I'm actually like delivering stuff, and just trying to figure out like, hey, what if I'm going to just focus on the campaign part of it, or if I'm going to do some of the side stuff.
I've had some people recommend that when you start Death Stranding, you should get to chapter 3 as fast as you can. Apparently, yeah,
I think I'm on chapter 2.
Yeah.
Basically, I went to the point where I have the potential to get a bike. But it is, it's out of battery juice.
Yeah.
I have to figure out a way to get, that charged a bit. And then they say, oh yeah, once you get it charged up a bit, it'll start auto charging. Like any sort of, electronics. But yeah, that the game has a lot of neat stuff to it, as, somebody likes just stuff that's doing things that are different than everybody else. This game has that in spades.
Oh yeah,
And also I just love the names of all the characters. There's yep. Dead Man, Die Hardman.
Yeah.
There's Amelie, but they say Amelie. What else? There's Hartman. I've not met him yet. But yeah, I've met a bunch of stuff. There's the BBs, the BTs. Also the drink of choice in this game is Monster Energy.
Yeah, because it's Kojima. It's
even fill up your canteen with that, I guess. But then when you're in the rain, it's able to filter out the timefall water.
Yeah,
which is a weird concept in itself, because the rain causes everything outside to age rapidly.
Yep.
So, like, as you're moving around, the grass will grow and die over and over again. If the, or at least if the BTs are around, at least. I don't know all the extents of that, but the rain also damages your packages, which was something I did not realize, and also didn't realize the packages you're picking up in the environment have to go to specific places. So I was like, okay, I'll take all this stuff over to here, and I'll just drop it off and say, nope, let's go here. I have to take it all the way back. I'm like, fuck. So I left it in a field. Figure I'll come back for it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, the story's pretty neat.
To what most Amazon delivery people do.
Yeah. I was like, this sure seems like a dystopia where Amazon takes over all future shipping. Especially if you're like, oh, this is going to come on release day. Nope, they just left it in a field. but yeah, the... Which is ironic because I had it pre-ordered for, I think, $50 from Amazon. And then I checked like 2 or 3 days ahead of time. And it's like, oh, they're trying to charge me $60 for this now. It's like, well, fuck this. Can't stop. And just pre-ordered the digital version. So, yeah, that's, I'm going to keep playing that some more. Probably stream it again tomorrow night. Show off some more of that, but... Yeah, that game is pretty neat so far. Look forward to put some more time into it. And, yeah, it's going to be kind of a fun game to check out some more of.
Hey.
Also, Teresa, I'm not playing more Pokemon Go because it just loads a black screen for me.
What? Did you try uninstalling or reinstalling?
Not yet.
Have you updated the app? Because there was a big update. Well, not a big update, but there was an update.
Yeah. It just gives me a black screen. It shows like the Niantic logo, and it's like black screen.
Aw, oh, man.
So I'm gonna have to figure out what the fuck is going on with that. So that's why I've been playing it lately.
Oh, okay. Probably uninstall or reinstall. That likely will take care of it.
All right. Uninstall and see if I remember to reinstall it.
Yeah.
but yeah, I checked out the Google subscription service. $10. The one's for $5. Whatever it's called.
Stadia?
No, the...
Play Pass.
Oh.
Which has some cool stuff on there. Stuff I hadn't checked out yet, but they also just added something, I think, today or yesterday called Play Points. Which is like, hey, you buy stuff, you get some reward points. Like, instantly, that you can spend on things, I guess. Looks like you get coupons for... microtransactions or something. I don't know. Because it has like Candy Crush Saga, You can spend it on her Angry Birds too, for 400 stuff in it or whatever. I don't know what the hell this is, but I got some points. Oh, there's Pokemon Go in here. What is this for? This is a $3 coupon.
Like for buying coins?
I don't know. It says estimated value 300 points, and it asked me to give me some money.
Hey, that might be enough for you to buy the Pikachu onesie.
I like my Mimikyu hat.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know, for anybody else, Mimikyu is a Pokemon that is a big fan of Pikachu, but is not very good at its mimicking of Pikachu.
Nope. It's like the Odo of the Pokemon world.
So it's like one of the more popular Pokemon just because it's kind of sad and cute. But yeah, that's been pretty much it.
All right.
How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, like I said, I got Death Stranding loading on my PS4 right now, but mostly this week I'm still playing Cold Steel 3. I'm now in Chapter 4. And I'm going to be completely honest. I thought Chapter 3 was where the game was going to end because it fucking, like, pulls out all the stops for it. But nope, not at all. Because now we're in Heimdallr, which, for those who don't know, that's the capital city of Erebonia. It's where the Imperial Palace is. It's where a lot of the government offices are. And basically, you, the students from the branch campus are cooperating, quote-unquote, with the students from the main campus. On top of doing usual field exercises, you're also on the lookout for some spies from the Republic of Calvard. Which, I'm starting to get the idea that what Cold Steel 4 is going to be leading into is just a full-on world war. Like, there really is going to be just a straight-up war between Erebonia and the Republic, because these two are just running headlong into conflict with each other. There is no other way it's going to happen. And I have a feeling that it's going to be Chancellor Osborne that's going to be responsible for it starting somehow. Because the games up to this point have been setting him up as a very divisive character. But after the, they annexed Crossbell and Northumbria, they're definitely making him out to be the bad guy. That's kind of where I'm at now. It's not terribly whole much. I will say, Oliver's little brother has become a massive dick. I don't know if it's because he's like a teenager now, but Cedric is a massive prick now. He's snarky, he's entitled, he acts like, you know, he can push everyone else around him around because, you know, he's an Imperial. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where this game goes. And especially where it ends, because, again, we've got Cold Steel 4 coming. I mean, technically it's already out in Japan. We're just waiting for the English version, but it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And if it's going to be one of the most if it's going to be able to, like, compare to Cold Steel 1 in just the most infuriating cliffhanger ever. I'll see. Apparently there's, like, one more chapter after this, and that's it. But, other than that, doing my usual reading. I'm not really got anything to add to that. Also, bagels. There is a place in Macon now that actually makes, like, authentic New York-style bagels. And I was like, well, Papa's got to go get him some lox and schmears. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, that sounds good to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is a place now you can go, and they will make you like a bagel with you know, what are you want it, just regular, you want it with poppy seeds, you know, that kind of thing. They've also got some nice, delicious lox made from salmon and tuna. And, you know, I've seen bagels and lox sandwiches before, and I always mistake the salmon thinking it was just a piece of tomato. It's not. It's actually salmon.
Yeah. You might have a taste bud surprise when you bite into it thinking it's something else.
Yeah. They are good, though, man. Now I know why New Yorkers love them so fucking much. But, yeah, so that's about it. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Yeah, I'll just say the PC version of Red Dead 2 is a complete mess.
Yeah, I mean, don't most of Rockstar North's games, when they come out for the PC, aren't they usually a mess to start with?
Well, usually they'll at least launch.
Oh.
I want to say GTA 5 was pretty good for most people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But every other one's kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I'll recount my experience. Mm. Maybe I'll actually have gotten it to work by then.
Yeah. Alrighty then. Well, in that case, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I want to take us back to the 90s. Yeah, the 90s. Clinton okay. was president.
The best decade.
You know, we went through like five or six different musical trends faster than pretty much the 60s, 70s, and 80s put together in like a very short amount of time. You know, first. And then there's the games. Because this is Smash Pad after all. And it always leads back to that at some point. Now, back in the late 90s, obviously video game violence was the big, one of the big how-to-dos out there. Now, obviously, if you talk right, you know, these days, it's mostly a dead debate.
Yeah.
I mean, every so often you'll have one, like, hack conservative try to come out and say, you know, blame video games on, like, you know, a mass shooting or something, and then... Yeah, nobody falls for it. Guys, it's like, been there, done that, you know. What if I told you there was a game that was going to be made for the PlayStation that was considered so violent that the publisher actually canceled the project outright?
Oh, I'll let you talk about it, but I know exactly what you're talking about because I played it.
Yeah, I've also played it. But, so, you know, you're thinking back, okay, 90s violent video games. I mean, we had Mortal Kombat, you know, that got pretty violent. We got Twisted Metal, which didn't have all the bloodshed, but holy shit, could it get dark. And, of course, we also had Eternal Champions, which was sort of like a more cartoony Mortal Kombat that somehow managed to be even more unbelievably gruesome.
Yeah.
That's not the game I'm talking about. No. The game I'm talking about was so violent and had such a grimdark premise behind it that the publishers were like, there is no way that we're going to be able to sell this game and get away with it unscathed. It was a game from Virgin Interactive. It was a fighting game. And it was called Thrill Kill.
Exactly what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm guessing so. The rest of us here have probably heard of Thrill Kill at one time or another, right?
Yeah, there was a bit of controversy then.
Yeah, so, what was Thrill Kill? And, what was the big fucking deal about it? Okay, so first thing you need to know, the game was originally supposed to come out in 1998. Which, of course, it ended up getting canceled. It was a fighting game, And the premise was, is that you were in hell. I'm like, yeah, tell me something I don't know, right? But you are in the kind of hell that isn't just all fire and brimstone. No, it's a bit more like Japanese hell, where, you know, it's less fire and brimstone and more people getting nailed to trees that are covered in spikes and then being melted down into jelly by horse head demons.
Yeah.
That's that kind of hell. And the idea is you play one of, let's see, how many characters were there? There was like, I think there was like 10 of them. And basically, these were all sinners who had committed terrible deeds in life. And were basically sent to hell and were incarnated as very disturbed, sort of morphed versions of their selves that was meant to reflect their sins and their during their past life. And the idea was, is that... yes, it was 10 characters, as it happened. The goddess of secrets, named Maruka, decides that she'll come up with this idea of just, you know, putting it on for the hell of it. Put on a tournament where all these people can beat the hell out of each other, and then they fight her, and whoever wins then gets to reincarnate back on Earth. It's like, okay, so... whatever. So what made this particular game so... well, for one thing, it was obviously, it was PlayStation, which meant it was in 3D. Now, if you look at it by modern terms, it is very primitive looking. But remember, this was 1998. And those polygons looked awfully... elaborate for us. So you're thinking, okay, so like, who do you play in this game? Well, there's a bunch of characters. Let's see. There's a hillbilly cannibal that uses a severed leg as a weapon and basically eats your face as a finishing move. Oh yeah, did I mention, by the way, this is very, since the, you know, this is an American fighting game, it has to have the finishing move.
No.
Yeah. Let's see. There was a doctor who was sent to hell because he kept performing these cruel experiments on patients. And he ended up dying because he grafted this steel jaw on his face and got an infection. And, you know, it's like, okay, so, you know, there's also, like, the guy who was, like, a profiler for the FBI on serial killers who eventually went insane and became a serial killer himself. He fights wrapped up in a straitjacket. There's the judge who would let guilty people get off the hook so he could hunt them down and torture and kill them himself. Yeah. But, you know, that's all well and good, but that's not the part where this game really steps over the line. No, then you get to characters such as Belladonna. Belladonna was a woman who caught her husband cheating with another woman. She then killed them both, and then... electrocuted herself in the bathtub. And so she comes back into existence in hell as a vicious dominatrix.
Okay.
And she fights wearing, you know, either like a latex cheetah outfit or like a maid costume. And she has one of those riding crops that she uses as a weapon. One of her finishing moves makes it look like she's giving the other person head.
Which, of course,
that's not what's actually happening. She's actually tickling them. But, you know, the camera's just off and her head's bobbing up and down. So it's like, yeah, you know what you're supposed to do in this game. Let's see, what else? There was the circus performer who basically was sent to hell because she killed all these people who were sexually abusing her.
Okay.
Yeah. There was the guy who was a midget who was a senator during his life and grafted on the stilts to his ankles to make him taller. He is very clearly supposed to be based on Joe Lieberman.
Nice for the time. Nice.
And of course, there's the bosses you fight, which are there's this dude who's basically like a human version of CatDog. You know what I mean, right?
Yes.
They're conjoined at the abdomen.
Yep.
There was the other one who was like a fireman who was always on fire. And then there was, Haruka herself, who of course was the final boss, and she basically looks like a reject from the Species movies. And every action resorted in just copious amounts of blood. There were some things that this game actually did that were unique. It was the first fighting game that actually allowed a simultaneous four-way fight. In fact, it was a major selling point of the game when it was being developed. But, of course, it would eventually get, it would eventually get canceled. And basically what happened is that Paradox Development, which, for those who don't know, they would eventually become Midway Los Angeles, developed it in the late 90s. It was going to be the next Mortal Kombat. Not literally, but it was going to be like the new Mortal Kombat equivalent. It was published by Virgin Interactive. But then guess what happened to Virgin Interactive?
Didn't get bought up by... Oh, shit. Didn't somebody buy him up?
Yes, they did. Do you know what company it was that did it? EA.
Oh.
Yeah, because they had... bought out Westwood Studios, which meant that EA ended up buying the game's publishing rights. And by this point, the game was pretty much all done. But a few weeks before the game was going to be shipped, Electronic Arts just said no. They actually put out a statement saying they didn't want to publish such a senselessly violent game as they thought it would harm their image.
Excuse me while I choke on that one a little bit.
Yeah. They also stated that they deemed the game so offensive that they would not even attempt to sell the game nor to have it released by another publisher. Now, good news is there are various beta versions of the game you can get online very easily. And then you can play through an emulator. So you can pretty much play the game as more or less as it was meant to be. For free.
The finished version did leak out a couple of years back. So
yeah, eventually. So,
I use the term finished lightly because, as it turns out, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. The engine that was used in Thrill Kill, it actually ended up getting used again. It would be used for a game released in 1999 that was released by Activision called Wu-Tang Shaolin Style, which was, in fact, a fighting game based around the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about the Wu-Tang Clan, that actually makes all the sense in the world.
Yep.
Then it was used for X-Men Mutant Academy 1 and 2. And for Rock'em Sock'em Robots Arena, which was released by Mattel Interactive in... 2000.
And it was used for another game that's not Cardinal Sin.
Yeah. So that was Thrill Kill. A game that was considered so violent that Electronic Arts apparently didn't want money and decided that they were just going to shit can the whole thing.
Yeah.
And nothing else controversial ever happened with Electronic Arts again ever. Never, ever. And that has been Randon's Random Factoid.
Nice. I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. You know, I've seen like actual like playthroughs of that game on YouTube, and it's actually very cartoonish in the way it approaches its subject matter. But anyway. All right, so with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we must start with our asshole of the week. And this week, it finally happened, folks. Somebody actually got killed because they were cutting in line waiting for a chicken sandwich from Popeyes.
Yep.
Hi, seriously?
Yes, seriously.
Yeah, let's see. It was
it was 15 Maryland, seconds, by the way.
Yeah, 15 seconds elapsed from when the altercation started to when it ended with the stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
Davis had been methodically cutting his way through the line for sandwiches for 15 minutes before the suspect confronted him at the front counter. The question my detectives had to answer is, how does a confrontation lead to a homicide in 15 seconds? Officer Stawinski. Told reporters outside a police station in Upper Marlboro. The family of the individual who was killed is looking for closure. The families and children who were in this restaurant are looking for closure. So yeah, they're still trying to identify the man who did it. Stabbed 28-year-old Kevin Tyrell Davis once their argument spilled outside the Oxon Hill restaurant Monday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like line etiquette would dictate you yell at the guy and tell him to get to the back of the line.
Yeah.
Not stab him. It's just chicken.
Yeah.
Might be good chicken, but it's still just chicken.
I mean, yeah, it is Popeyes.
Yay.
But seriously.
I'll tell you what. People got to get their priorities fucking straight.
Yeah. You know what I think? I think America is canceled.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Death Stranding's about.
Yeah. I think it's about time we just burn it to the ground and build something better on its ashes. Just fuck it. I officially give up. It's your fault, America. You let this happen. But anyway, it's not all bad news. We also got Heroes of the Week. Because we have a group of 11,000 scientists who have officially come forward endorsing research confirming once and for all that we are in a climate emergency. We shouldn't have to do this, but apparently there are enough people who are so fucking thick-headed that they have to.
Yep.
It's all fake news.
And released on the day that satellite data shows that last month was the warmest October on record. The study says that simply measuring global surface temperatures is an inadequate way of capturing the real dangers of an overheating world. So the authors included a range of data which they believe represents a suite of graphical vital signs of climate change over the past 40 years. Mm. These indicators include the growth of human and animal populations, per capita meat production, global tree cover loss, as well as fossil fuel consumption. Some progress has been seen in some areas. For example, renewable energy has grown significantly, with consumption of wind and solar increasing 373% per decade. But it's still 28 times smaller than fossil fuel use in 2018. Taken together, the researchers say most of their vital signs indicators are going in the wrong direction, add up to a climate emergency. An emergency means that if we do not act or respond to the impacts of climate change by reducing our carbon emissions, reducing our livestock production, reducing our land clearing and fossil fuel consumption, the impacts will likely be more severe than we've experienced to date. That could mean there are areas on Earth that are not inhabitable by people. The research shows six areas in which immediate steps should be taken that could make a major difference. Energy, politicians should impose carbon fees high enough to discourage the use of fossil fuels. They should end subsidies to fossil fuel companies, implement massive conservation practices while also replacing oil and gas with renewables.
Mm-hmm.
Short-lived pollutants. These include methane, hydrofluorocarbons, and soot. Researchers say that limiting these has the potential to cut the short-term warming trend by over 50% over the next few decades. Mm. Nature, stop land clearing, restore forests, grasslands, and mangroves, which could all help sequester CO2. Food, a big dietary shift is needed, says researchers, so that people eat mostly plants and consume fewer animal products. Reducing food waste is also seen as critical. Convert the economy's reliance on carbon fuels and change away from growing the world's domestic product and pursuing affluence.
Yep.
Population, the world needs to stabilize the global population, which is growing by around 200,000 a day.
Yep. So we got our guidelines there.
Yep.
What we got to do.
We can do all of it. GOP essentially like downplaying climate change because, well, where are the scientists at? They're not leading this. It's politicians are leading it, so it has to be fake.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could actually do all of that.
And more.
With only a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
Because understand, the vast majority of the emissions that are being put out are basically all from, like, what is it, like 11 corporations?
Something like that.
Yeah. Right now the only country that's really doing like drastic shit about this is China. Not a good look, America.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's and the problem is gonna be that big oil and, you know, beef and all that have their hooks deep into politicians.
Yeah. There is a way to solve that. I just don't know if current government is up to it. But that's for another time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so with that out of the way, we now actually have some good news. We got the U.S. election. We had some special elections happen this week, and it was another blue wave. And probably the first big one, the one you really need to know, is Virginia. Because Virginia officially became a blue state again this week.
Yes.
The Dems took control of both the Virginia House and the Senate.
Yep. The other day, what was his name? Ralph Northam.
Mm-hmm.
Was basically talking about all these different plans that they're going to start passing because basically they got everybody on board now.
Yeah.
Which also I was like, holy shit, that guy's still the governor.
Yep.
Then I had to look it up when that happened. So do you guys know when the whole blackface yearbook thing happened?
It was in the 1980s, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, when that whole controversy.
Oh, that was like a couple of months ago.
Any other guesses?
Mm-mm.
That was in February.
Yeah, like I said.
Yeah, that was 9 months ago. He's still mm-hmm. there. I looked up his Wikipedia page because I had to find out if anything actually happened. I'm going to look it up again here. The final paragraph of that whole section is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
A months-long investigation into the photo that appeared in the 1984 Eastern Virginia Medical School yearbook could not conclusively determine who is in the photo or even how the image ended up there. A team hired by EVMS released a 55-page report May 22, 2019, saying we could not conclusively determine the identity of either individual depicted in the photograph. McGuire Woods contacted over 80 people connected to the school, including 5 members of their yearbook staff at the time.
Mm.
They did a investigation for 3 months and produced a 55-page report about a yearbook photo.
Yep.
Of one guy in blackface and one guy in a Klan hood.
Yeah.
Like that's amazing, folks.
Well, this mm-hmm. is the school that did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if they're a public school or not, but
yeah.
Still.
Yeah. And even after all that, he's still the governor and the Democrats swept the election. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from Virginia, we go to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Where Republicans won all of the seats that were up for grabs except one. Governor.
Mm-hmm.
former Attorney General Bashar managed to basically lead the incumbent and massive jackass Matt Bevin.
Who Trump stumped for the day before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically went to a rally and is like, you can't let this guy lose. It'll make me look bad. Well.
Go ahead and look bad.
Yeah. And the thing is, Matt Bevin is the type of jackass who just doesn't know when to quit. So he hasn't conceded. He has actually requested a re-canvassing.
I saw a good joke about that. Matt Bevin joins a long line of men who wouldn't take no for an answer.
Well, he's probably gonna still lose because he's actually very unpopular with both parties.
Yep, and is behind by 7,000 votes?
Yeah.
And guess how many the third party candidates received?
Like, I think it was like 1,200 or something.
28,000.
Ah.
Hmm.
So you can thank them for helping to swing the election.
Also in Kentucky, Republican Daniel Cameron is the first African American attorney general in the state's history.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we get even better. You guys remember back around the time after Trump was elected and there was that photograph that came out of the cyclist flipping off his motorcade?
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
she also got fired.
Yeah, and she got fired for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she did.
Yeah, well, she ran for what position was it?
Supervisor for the Algonquian District in Loudoun County, Virginia.
Yeah, and she won.
Yep. The nice thing is, let's see, that area, that county, Trump has a golf course there.
Wonderful.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Karma.
Hope she's back on her bike.
Yep.
On her golf.
Oh, and then it gets even better. You guys remember Danica Rome? Mm-hmm. The first transgender woman to be elected representative.
Indeed.
She got reelected this week. So she's the first, not only is she the first transgender representative to get elected, she's also the first transgender representative to get reelected.
Yep.
See, these are good signs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, things are, they're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Yep. You know, it's not even a – I wouldn't even consider it a Republican-Democrat thing. I think we've gone way past that at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's more like, can we maybe restore some common sense, please?
Yes. Please.
That would be all right.
Yeah.
And that she won by 57%, so
mm-hmm.
wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
It's definitely showing that the times and the demographics are changing.
Yeah.
For the better. Mm. All right. All right. So that was basically the summary for the elections we had this week. Now we move on to the regular political stuff. Yeah. First and foremost, guess who's decided to join the Dem 2020 presidential race? Fucking Michael Bloomberg.
Yep. Mm. The mayor of New York.
Mm-hmm. Former.
Former. Who people did not like.
What the fuck's he got to do with Alabama?
That's the first primary that he could get into.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Does he want a job as a talk show host or something? What's the angle here?
They have a lot of money. They can just force themselves on this race.
Although I heard apparently they're actually like upping the they're increasing the sort of threshold that you need to get into the next debate. So
yeah, the Tulsi Gabbard exceptions.
Yeah. So yeah, We'll see how all that goes. Speaking of trolls, nobody wants to ever come back again. Somebody is running for a Doug Jones Senate seat in Alabama. It's Jeff Sessions.
Kill it with fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the racist elf is back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to make for some good SNL.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know who can get back in the costume.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's going to be fun. All right. And now, here we go. You knew it was coming. We got more impeachment bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the record, we don't have this in the actual show notes, but it was announced a little earlier this evening. Apparently, the House is wanting to get all of this have the whole thing wrapped up by Christmas. So he might end up being impeached in the next 8 weeks or so.
So it's about to get
late. Oh yeah, basically, yeah. They're basically trying to streamline the whole thing.
Hmm.
So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, both Donald Trump and Rand Paul have been demanding the unmasking of this whistleblower, which, by the way, is illegal.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very, very illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, other parts of the GOP are not want no part of that shit.
Hmm.
Yeah. To which I think Rand Paul is basically saying, like, the law only prevents one specific part of the government from unmasking him.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, that's not how it works.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, they talked to... Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying they're talking about this part of the law doesn't really apply. When, remember a couple of weeks back, there was the skiff that Matt Gaetz and those other numbnuts broke
into? Yeah.
Do you know what the standing orders for the guards at the door are supposed to be?
Shoot to kill?
Yes.
Yeah.
So just be, you know, thankful that they didn't follow the letter of the law that time.
No. But anyway, yeah, so obviously other parts of the GOP have realized that, yeah, it's best if I not be as uninvolved in this shit as possible.
Yeah.
And those are going to be key because if the impeachment goes through, you know, the Senate's going to be half the ones who are going to have to vote to... you know, convict, and the more of them you can get, the more, you know, the more obvious that will happen.
Hmm.
So, unfortunately, it means we have to take some of the worst people and hope that they end up giving in to the angels of their better nature. In other words, we're fucked.
Yeah, you might very well be.
Yeah. Speaking of being fucked... Several different federal agencies have released a joint statement this week warning about interference in the 2020 election.
Yep.
Because, holy shit, we know there's going to be some.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Not just Russia. China, Iran, and others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a tit-for-tat thing because, most of you know, America likes to meddle in other elections all the fucking time.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Quite a long history of that, actually.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and kind of the amazing thing of this is these agencies don't usually coordinate like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's kind of more of a big statement on that part alone. Coming together, put this joint letter out saying, hey, people need to get your shit in order.
Yeah, because we got to...
problem.
We got a crisis a coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know if you guys know that, I guess, did you guys watch the most recent John Oliver?
No, haven't.
He did one on voting machines. Do they use voting machines in your part of Illinois?
Uh-huh, they Teresa? Do. Yeah, and there's been a lot of controversy and reports of tampering and whatnot.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. In my state of Georgia, we use a particular program for our voting machines. And they used to have like a really big hole, security hole, that someone could use to interfere with it. And so the software company that did it, you know, they released a patch that could actually fix that loophole. Here's the problem, though. You know when that patch came out? Man. 2013. And my state has yet to update it.
Now, their IT people need to be fucking fired.
Yeah, they've basically been kicking the can down the road for about 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, no. You know? No.
Anyway, now in international news, from a city in Germany, specifically, it's a city from Germany we've all heard of, Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Dresden earlier this week announced that they have a Nazi emergency. Now, as everybody probably knows, Germany tends to take Nazi shit very, very seriously.
Oh, hell yeah.
They do not fuck around when it comes to this shit. There have been political parties in the past who have been straight up just banned. Like, made illegal because they were considered far too Nazi for anyone's liking. And some of these are more obvious than others. The current culprit right now is the Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD, which was originally started as like a center-right party of like, university professors and the intelligentsia, and sort of got subsumed by crypto-Nazis. Basically they had a resolution, the counselors in the city, they had a resolution acknowledging that right-wing extremist attitudes and actions are occurring with increasing frequency and calling on the city to help victims of far-right violence, protect minorities, and strengthen democracy. And so, like I said, Dresden, you guys know on what part of Germany Dresden is in, right?
No,
it's on the eastern half.
Challenged. Okay.
Do you guys know what happened 30 years ago tomorrow?
Aha, that would be the wall coming down. The
wall came down. Do you know what happened to East Germany after the wall came down?
They had a lot of trouble.
It went to shit very quickly. Because basically they sold off the very generous welfare state that the previous communist government had built up and privatized basically everything. And I mean, let's be honest, by the last 20 years of its existence, the German Democratic Republic, as it was called, was already kind of living on borrowed time because for those who don't know, after World War II, Germany got divided up. And it was actually divided up into like four different areas. The Soviets ended up taking the part that would become Eastern Germany. The other three parts were divided up between the U.S., France, and Great Britain. And those parts would all come together and become West Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the like agricultural stuff was all located in West Germany. The eastern half was primarily like an industrial hub, which meant that basically during its entire existence, all of the agricultural products that the GDR needed, it basically had to import from other parts of the Warsaw Pact. And it just could not, under any good circumstances, equal the kind of consumer goods and range of consumer goods and luxuries that the Western half could provide. And also, of course, when the wall came up, I mean, it did straight up divide whole families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason why people don't look on the wall fondly. There are a lot of people in East Germany who used to live in the GDR. People I've met and have known who remember living in Eastern Germany fairly fondly because, you know, there was – obviously you had shit like the Stasi and – that crap. But you also had stuff like, you know, free healthcare, free education. Everyone got a house. Homelessness was non-existent in East Berlin. There were no homeless people in East Berlin. And all of that disappeared after the wall came down. And it's because of that shit that all the Nazi stuff kind of made a massive comeback in that part of the country. Because, you know, you basically went through, you know, what they claimed was communism, which didn't really live up to the standards that communism is supposed to live up to. So people are like, okay, well, then maybe the other extreme is what we need to go to. And that's kind of the reason why this shit's happening right now. Because, look, man, you can talk about freedom all you want, but it don't mean jack shit to a guy who's starving to death on the street.
That's true.
I mean, that's just basic facts. Yep. Anyway, next up. Over in Indonesia, there was a cleric that helped write some of the strictest adultery laws in the region. And guess what he got caught doing this week?
Adultering.
Guess what he got flogged for doing this week?
Adultering?
Yes.
Irony, bitch.
Yeah. So yeah, public caning, which, for those of you who don't know, in modern terms, caning isn't really so much like this really dramatic thing where there's like a... Like, okay, like, you'll see the picture here in the BBC article. Basically, he was to be hit 23 times. The cane that they actually use is like I think it's like a thin piece of bamboo. And basically, they smacked him with it 23 times, and that was it.
The caning is actually, and it can be... It can be a very tissue damaging thing.
Oh yes, it can be.
And the woman received the almost the same. She was caned 23 times.
Yep.
You guys remember that guy from America, like back in the
Back in the early 90s, he went to Singapore, and sprayed graffiti on someone's car.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a stupid ass thing to do, but.
So, yeah, that happened. Man, irony, right?
I'm wondering if anybody asked him, like, while this was going on. So is your law working pretty well?
We've made it pretty public here that we have very little tolerance for religion.
No.
Yeah. You know.
Stupid religions.
Yeah. And this kind of bullshit is kind of why.
It just holds back.
Yeah, he cheated on his wife. He's an asshole for doing it. Not sure that he should be dragged out and publicly beaten for it by a religious official. Now, by his wife, on the other hand, that's debatable. In fact, even understandable. I'd insist on it. But that's not what we're dealing with here. Anyway, so next up, everybody knows the World Series happened and the Washington Nationals ended up winning it. And as is customary, they were invited over to the White House to meet the president. Of course, this is Donald Trump we're talking about. So, amongst other things, pitcher Sean Doolittle basically said, no, fuck you. I'm not going.
He basically said, there's a lot of things, policies that I disagree with, but at the end of the day, it has more to do with the divisive rhetoric and the enabling of conspiracy theories and widening the divide in this country. At the end of the day, as much as I wanted to be there with my teammates and share that experience with my teammates, I can't do it. I just can't do it. People say you should go because it's about respecting the office of the president. And I think over the course of his time in office, he's done a lot of things that maybe don't respect the office. And yeah, like he sent, referenced his issues on race relations, like the Central Park Five, the Fair Housing Act, and his comments on the rally in Charlottesville that got a woman killed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hang out with somebody who talks like that. Let's see. He also talked about, I have a brother-in-law who has autism, and Trump is a guy that mocked a disabled reporter. Mm-hmm. I'll explain to him that I hung out with somebody who mocked the way that he talked or the way that he moves his hands. I just can't get past that stuff.
Yep. Was that just this week that this came out? Because I swear to God, I have heard this before.
No, this was the 4th.
Hmm. Okay, yeah.
But yeah, this guy also has a history of kind of backing this stuff up when he was in Oakland. They were going to have a night that was to celebrate gay people in their community. Mm-hmm. And sort of getting the sort of vibe that there were people that were very pissed off about it. He bought a whole section of tickets in the stadium and gave them to a local clinic for LGBT youth to be able to go and have plenty of space to stay away from shitty people. That kind of thing. So he's very much been backing up his thoughts on that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but others did go, including Kurt Suzuki, who is the team's catcher. And he went out, put on a MAGA hat, and then I'm guessing Donald Trump was trying to, like, give him a hug from behind, but all he ended up doing was grabbing his boobs.
Yep.
What an awkward photo that is.
Yeah, that's very much like people are like, oh, so this is his move.
Hmm.
He just had to, he just did it to a guy this time.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I guess.
He's wearing the MAGA hat, but it doesn't look like he particularly wants to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially when somebody is randomly touching his pecs.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, he very much got a lot of criticism for putting on the hat, being a guy who is Japanese American.
Yeah.
From Hawaii.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he do that?
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, that's probably not the right move to make. And he very much criticized back, saying it was amazing. That was the president just trying to have some fun. Everybody makes everything political. It was about our team winning the World Series. And it's like, no, that hat's is pretty political.
The World Series is over? It happened? Get,
which would explain why he's a catcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see. They also had a player, Ryan Zimmerman, who did a little speech saying, this is an incredible honor. I'd like to think none of us will ever forget. We'd also like to thank you for keeping everyone here safe in our country and continuing to make America the greatest country to live in the world.
Could you flagellate anymore?
Hmm. Well,
yeah, and then people kind of came to a quick realization that, like, this team that represents Washington, D.C. doesn't necessarily represent Washington, D.C.'s values.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
The way they vote is typically heavily Democratic.
Yep. Yeah, but as you know, D.C.'s been trying to become a state for years now, and take a guess who's been trying to make sure that doesn't happen.
Congress.
Yeah. Anyway, so last week, you may remember, there was a mandate for the people at Deadspin that was issued by the people from Geo Media saying that they needed to, quote, stick to sports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the executive behind that has actually resigned.
Yep. Yeah, he said, I wanted to let you all know that effective immediately, I resigned my position as editorial director of Geo Media. It's the right moment for me to leave to pursue an entrepreneurial opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Translation?
Uh-huh.
Shit.
I admire the journalism that you produce and the unique voice that is otherwise missing from mainstream media. It's been a great honor, and I wish you all the very best. I'm certain that the sites will grow and thrive in the future. Which is ironic, because I think the last person that was working at Deadspin quit this week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Deadspin has no F.
Yeah.
So it's now him going hot, 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 hot.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next up, and this is a story of how another story of how a corporation puts their foot in their mouth, then realizes what they did at the last minute and reverses course. Krispy Kreme actually shut down a college student in Minnesota who was actually reselling their donuts.
Okay.
And then they decided, no, wait, actually, this ain't going to look good for us.
Yeah, so the thing that was interesting about this is that there are no Krispy Kremes in Minnesota.
Hmm.
So mm-hmm. he would get up early in the morning and drive to the closest Krispy Kreme in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Load up with a bunch of dozens of donuts, dozen boxes of donuts, and drive. Let's see. He went drive his Ford Focus 4 hours and 270 miles to the Krispy Kreme in Iowa, purchase 112-count boxes of donuts, and travel back to his home state and resell them back to eagerly awaiting Minnesotans. Charges customers anywhere between $17 to $20 per box, with some paying $100 each time he made the lengthy trip. Soon became known as Donut Guy.
Mm-hmm.
His actual name is Jason, Jason with a Y.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Saturday would have marked his 20th consecutive drive for donuts, but before he complete the achievement, Krispy Kreme put an end to his entrepreneurial efforts.
Mm-hmm.
In a Facebook post on his Krispy Kreme Run Minnesota page Thursday, Gonzalez explained that he received a call from the Nebraska location who told him to shut down operations because the sales were creating a liability for their company. I know they told one of the big managers in Nebraska directly, and he called me. He said corporate told him to cease and desist. Pushback on Krispy Kreme led many of Gonzalez's customers to express their disappointment on Facebook. A lot of customers are pretty upset, and I don't blame them. I was upset too. Scrolling through all the comments has definitely been pretty upsetting with how frustrated everyone is.
Mm.
And so by Monday, Krispy Kreme issued a statement announcing that they had reversed their decision, would fully support Gonzalez working as an independent contractor. Today we reached out to Jason to express our appreciation for his love for of Krispy Kreme and admiration for his entrepreneurial spirit. We're going to help him achieve his goals, which include being debt-free when he graduates in 2021, in part by selling Krispy Kreme donuts. Our intent recording the temporary stoppage of him selling donuts was to ensure product quality and regulatory compliance to protect both Jason and Krispy Kreme. Our main concern is that the donuts Jason sells maintains our high product quality standards, given the distance and manner in which he is transporting and distributing them. So we're happy to work with Jason as an independent operator to ensure consistent delivery of our high-quality donuts to our fans in Minnesota. And so they decided to make up for being a dick by donating 500 dozen donuts when he restarts his business.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so he's looking to keep that going. He also has a GoFundMe page to raise money for a new car so he can travel safely and transport 200 to 300 dozens of donuts, as opposed to about 110 dozens.
Mm-hmm.
Which he has time. About 7,500 of a $10,000 goal.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll get it.
Yeah. I can fully operate as an independent operator and start doing what I love to do, which is bringing back donuts, making people happy again. This never would have happened or been able to continue without everyone's help. The goal is to continue to do it until I graduate and hopefully pass it down to someone else that is in my position. It's one of the first times in my life where it's not just myself believing in me and my ideas. It's an incredible feeling, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Which also should be assigned to Krispy Kreme, like, hey, open a location in Minnesota.
You're right. You're right.
Make this guy the manager of your location.
Yeah,
if you're gonna do it,
and he's going to school for accounting, so he's very much a numbers dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
it sucks
out
loud
on this because, first of all, once a sale is made, that's it. Your responsibility kind of goes away. You don't have to make sure that the person who bought your donuts is going to resell them in a way that you deem fit.
That's, indeed, yes.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're not Apple. God damn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I appreciate the course correction and the way that, you know, this ended up kind of working out, and it's good, but that was just a whole lot of stupidity.
Yeah, it's very much like some corporate people are like, hey, we need, people should not be reselling our donuts.
Hey, this guy's making money and it's not us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But they don't realize, like, he's spending 4 hours each time he does this, and a lot of money in gas to make this trip. Like, he's doing a great expense.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, we got our last serious story before we move on to the entertainment part of the show. And holy fucking shit. So there have been many instances before of people who are mentally disabled being abused by people, being used for, like, forced labor or stuff. This one takes the fucking cake, though.
This really does. So
this is in South Carolina.
Yeah, this black man was hired when he was 12.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal. It was illegal then. Mm-hmm. Still illegal now. And it's at a family restaurant. And very quickly, they started, the guy who's running the restaurant started making him work like 16 hours days, Monday through Saturday, 11 hours on Sunday. So, you know, you get a little bit of time off. No vacations, hid him from his family when his family came. His family knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever this poor mentally disabled guy would say, you know, he doesn't want to be here, try to get away, they'd beat him in the head with pans, belt buckles, hot tongs, pour hot grease on him, and made him live in a roach-infested apartment behind the place. And this went on for 23 years.
Not weeks, not days, years.
Oh, he took all of his money, like, made him work for nothing, called him the N-word, just fucking horrible.
Basically, he kept a slave.
Yeah, he did.
I know we don't do this anymore, but could we maybe bring back drawing and quartering just this once?
Just this
once? I was going to suggest the guillotine, but...
Oh, I was going to go worse. I was going to say hanging.
Mm.
Well, drawing and quartering is like the worst fucking thing that you can do to a person. Because I described that on this show, what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, someone who was friends with the family figured out what was going on, saw a scar on the man's neck. And the poor man said that he didn't try to run away because he had nowhere to go. And all he wanted to do was have his mom come see him, which is just fucking heartbreaking. And his parents tried, but they would lock him in the freezer or lock him up in the kitchen so they couldn't, you know, his family would try. And, you know, I don't understand. So anyway, this good Samaritan person, or this just person, you know, being a good person, just a person, because you're not supposed to be a bad person. Like the restaurant dude, said, hey, something's wrong here, and contacted the NAACP. They got involved. She actually let the guy live with her for a couple of months, and everybody was helping him get back on his feet. So the dude who did this was ordered to pay back $272,000 in stolen wages, and he got 10 years in prison. The next day, the judge had a guy come before her, no previous charges, nothing. He had some marijuana. They found an unregistered firearm in his car. He got 12 years.
First time offender, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And gee, I'm gonna make some assumptions on what this gentleman's ethnic background might be.
You know, actually, I did not see anything about if he was white or black or other. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 23 years this guy was tortured, overworked, and not a single day off. Can you fucking believe? Can you fucking believe? And all the things that must have gone wrong with him, like his teeth are probably rotted and he's in pain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is just horrible. Is clearly this was one that I brought up, and yeah. I was pretty much seething about it when I read it and put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, unfortunately, that's the last really serious story we have tonight. Now we can go on to a little bit of lighter stuff. So first and foremost, you guys probably know about how there's been like this weird trend recently of taking dead celebrities and kind of resurrecting them using CG.
Yeah.
Well,
fake technology.
Yeah. Well, there's this film coming up called Finding Jack. And they're making a CG resurrection of James Dean.
Oh, can they not?
Yeah, and the weird thing is it's a Vietnam War movie.
Mm-hmm.
He died in 1955.
Yeah.
He was not around for the Vietnam War.
No, that would have been the Korean War era, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they obtained the rights to use Dean's image from his family.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it's going to be a realistic version of James Dean, which is weird. It's like, okay, why not use like an actual actor?
Yeah, you could have used
like it's taking jobs away from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we got a few actors right now. I'm sure, like one or two that could probably handle it, mm-hmm. or 500 or 600.
Yeah,
if you just need a pretty white boy, there's tons of them in Hollywood. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shortage.
Anyway. Yeah, car crash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Particularly bad car crash, too.
Yeah.
Because he was flying.
Yeah. Like, wasn't that he had just gotten the car and...
Yeah, he just gotten the car and he was taking it out for its first drive.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
Driving kind of fast.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. Loose,
and it was a British car, so it had crappy brakes.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's true.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we got some shenanigans from the Motion Picture Academy. They are actually blocking a Nigerian film called Lionheart from the international category because the movie's dialogue is in English.
Yeah. So it's the best international feature film category.
Mm-hmm.
Which has a record number of films qualified for it. It was 93, now it's 92.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they also have a record number of female directors in this race, which was 29, but now it's 28. It was the first film ever submitted to the Oscars by Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other kind of bad thing about this is, but it's mostly in English, which is the... which violates an Academy rule that entries in the category must have predominantly non-English dialogue track. The catch is that English is Nigeria's primary language.
Yep.
Their official language.
Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why Nigerian immigrants are able to sort of get into are able to sort of assimilate in America so quickly because they already speak the language.
Yeah, and... Ava DuVernay was one of the people bringing up this as a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically the director was saying, we don't have control over who colonized us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, as a country, they qualify for the award, but they technically can't submit anything unless they don't represent their language situation accurately. Because it does have some non-English stuff in it, but it's not as much as the English. And it's like it's because they have something like 500 languages total that are spoken in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And English is the one that unites everybody because it's the one everybody knows.
I love how the Motion Picture Academy just continues to prove how out of touch they are.
Yeah. Irrelevant.
Every freaking time. Mm. You think that they would get something right, you know?
Mm. No, what do you expect? It's to run by a bunch of old white guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But, yeah, so... Next up, more movie news. Joker is now officially the most profitable comic book film ever released.
Which is remarkable.
That's, yeah. Like, again, this is another extremely controversial piece of art, I suppose.
Yeah.
just, you know, maybe this is between this and Death Stranding. What else have we got that's kind of kind of ticking that?
That's divisive.
It's not like a comic book movie, typically.
But yeah, it has a budget of $62.5 million and has earned over 15 times its cost and counting.
That's an insane amount of money.
Yeah, and keep in mind, this is going up against, like, the Avengers. This is going up against the whole Marvel machine, and...
Yeah, it's surpassed stuff like Venom, which was $854 million box office for a $90 million movie. Which that's just under 10 times. Tim Burton's Batman was $411 for a $35 million movie. Deadpool was $783 for a $58 million movie. TMNT was $200 million for a $13.5 million movie. And The Mask was $351 over a $23 million movie. So there's a lot of competition for that, and it seems like it's going to cross $1 billion, too. Because it's at $957 million.
Yeah. So, man, I'm guessing this movie has had an international release, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so apparently a lot of Asians really love this movie. Wow. I'm guessing this is getting like that South Korean and China money.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the breakdown is on that.
I'm probably going to look that up later, because I'm actually surprised that it's made that much money. I mean, because it's... Yeah, I mean, it's not only the fact that it's DC, but I mean, the story itself is very sort of constrained because of, you know, its overall topic. I mean, it's about a very specific point in the early 80s in the United States. Yeah. You know, the Batman stuff is almost tacked on at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's made just over $300 million domestic, $645 million international.
Damn. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you guys have probably checked out, you know, in South America and the Middle East right now, where all the rebellions are happening, you've seen a bunch of folks in Joker makeup recently. Mm. So it's having an effect on somebody, obviously.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm.
Yeah. See, South Korea's 38 million out of that. Mm. Mexico's 42. Brazil's 34. UK 66 million.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anyway, moving on from there, FX, they are actually taking their content and future productions, and starting March of next year, they are moving it all to Hulu.
Oh.
Yeah,
do we have to pay more?
Let's
just cut to the chase here.
Disney essentially owns Hulu now. Hmm. So essentially all of FX's stuff is going to be part of Hulu's lineup. Sort of like where they're putting all their adult stuff over there. Including like even the Marvel stuff that is not necessarily like PG-13 friendly. So yeah, they're going to have, let's see, they're doing 4 original series for Hulu next year. Dramas Devs, Mrs. America, A Teacher, and The Old Man. They've been working for FX for a while now, but now they're going to be exclusive to Hulu. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you thought Disney Plus was going to be like Disney's streaming service, they're going to have 2, essentially.
Yeah.
Yes, of course they are.
Oh, HBO's got like 40 of
them. Yeah, they got 3 that are HBO specific.
Yeah.
HBO Now, Go, and Max.
Yeah. Now Go Max. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's almost a sentence.
We'll have to quiz people on what's the difference between each one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, some very good news. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 has gotten a April 8th, 2022 release date.
Ah, damn it. Why couldn't it have been like closer to Christmas?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. I hate when they do that because it's so far out. It's just annoying. It's like,
well, here's your spring break present. What the hell? Is a spring break present?
Spring break in 3 years.
It's in 3 years.
They're going Easter baskets, maybe. Depending on when the hell Easter is.
Well, don't worry, because Frozen 2 comes out this year.
No. Oh, can you? No.
No.
It's what, Star Wars and Frozen 2 that are right there before Christmas?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, and Easter is April 12th, so screw that Easter basket idea. Ah!
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so Lord and Miller are going to be back to produce this.
Yeah.
Mm. Which the first one was done for just $90 million.
Yeah.
And still one of the best looking CG movies around.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I guess Sony has a musical adventure tale, Vivo, with original songs from Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's being pushed to April 2021. Mm. So Sony's got some stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, last story of the night, we finally got a trailer for the H.P. Lovecraft movie, The Color Out of Space, starring Nick Cage.
This is yep. about as Nick Cage a movie as you could get.
Yeah, it's from the producers of Mandy, which from what I've heard is one of the best Nick Cage movies. Because it is ridiculous as hell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous, but also...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I have read. Mm. And basically, it's kind of like one of the first examples of like the of like an asteroid coming to you know an asteroid hitting Earth and spreading like a really nasty thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it's never been done since. It's the one story that told that.
Mm-hmm. Well, back when it was written, it was probably innovative.
Mm-hmm. It was early 20th century, so anyway. Alright, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alright, well, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question or comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of popular podcast aggregator you can possibly think of. We're a good 6-to-1 chance that we're already there. And if not, wait a few minutes, because we'll show up. Anyway. All right, so with that, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Analfo, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi, good night. That little baby from Death Stranding is just far too creepy for its own good.